I've intruded on a very personal ritual here, and clearly my presence is making you uncomfortable.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 6, Baby. And I ought to know, I'm Baby. And now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello.
Hello, listener and or listeners. I really do kind of admire Dawson's Creek's commitment to just being like, and here's the episode title, noun, preferably one with fewer than five letters. Anyway.
For now.
Yeah. Before we get into Baby, a word about our other podcast, Again With This, episode 184, which drops March 15th, we'll continue our celebration in a question mark of James Van Der Beek's and my birthday month. That is, let's watch James Van Der Beek in Medium. And no, we're not talking about his talent. Or are we? You'll have to join the Patreon to find out. That is Season 5, Episode 9, All in the Family. It is available on Paramount Plus, or you can just let us watch it. You can leave it to the professionals. For that and the other dozens and dozens and dozens of episodes, join us, won't you? againwiththispodcast.com/club.
We've been getting questions about this, by the way, before we get into this episode. Our podcast host, Audio Boom, limits how many episodes it can keep in a feed, which means that the earliest, Again With This, episodes about 90210 are dropping off. Apparently the first season is gone entirely, judging by the person that reported it this week. So they're only gone from the podcast feed. You can always still find them at againwiththispodcast.com. So they have not disappeared forever. You can still look them up. So please do if you want to go back and re-listen to those. And it seems like a lot of you do, which is so nice and also so weird, but I get it, I guess.
Well, how else will you get that don't be such a squeeve sound drop? That's season one, I think. So yeah.
I think you're right.
Thank you, squeefologists.
I want to back up to Dave's I'm Baby, because my favorite thing that I've done in like probably the past 5 years was teach him the I'm Baby me. So look it up. It's very funny. And whenever you are in your house and you want someone else to do something you very easily could do yourself, that's all you need to say. Can you please go get me a blanket? I'm Baby. And then the other person has to do it. And you can take turns. You can't both be Baby at the same time. But everyone gets an opportunity to be Baby in the house. And I think that's only fair. Speaking of Baby, this episode, but we're not going to get to the baby yet. We have to start with the someone else's baby in the B plot. In which Tamara is an even bigger villain than we thought. Here's where things are with Pacey and Tamara, clip two.
I think we should go out this weekend, just you and me.
We usually do, Pacey.
No, we don't go out, we stay in. We first invent some school-related reason why I need to come over to your place on a Friday night, and then we lock the doors and close the blinds so that none of the townsfolk could possibly see us together. I know that you're having trouble acknowledging the fact that we have a relationship, but you have to admit there's something going on here.
Yes, there is something.
Right. So you know what? I think we should start acting like it. Going out in public together, it'll be great, like a real couple.
See, that's sweet, but it's hardly practical.
It doesn't have to be in Cape Side. We can go down to Providence, okay? We'll have dinner, catch a movie. Nobody knows us down there. We'll be just like all the rest of the dysfunctional couples out for a good time on a Saturday night. So what do you say? Will you go out with me, Miss Jacobs?
Not if we're going all the way to Providence. That's at least an hour. But also, what is the point of complaining about this, I guess? Because whatever route they take out of it, spoiler, that's what we're doing, and thank God.
Yeah.
But, ugh.
It's grim.
Yeah.
Also, like, how hard do you have to try to come up with these pretexts? Like, if you know people are paying that much attention to you, that should have been your first sign? I mean, there should have been a zeroth sign, which is, it's a felony and that's the end of the conversation. But, like, who has believed that Pacey is going over to Miss Jacobs' house because, like, he forgot his homework and then is gone for 4 hours, you know, like, or whatever it is?
Yeah.
Anyway, smash cut to the bathroom at school where Dawson is shocked that Tamara agreed to go to Providence with Pacey, and Pacey clarifies she didn't, but it seems like she might. He just needs to get his driver's license again, and only then sort of does a cursory look under the stalls to see if anyone has been in there listening. Terrible OPSEC. Mm-hmm. Dawson jokes about Pacey spending so much energy trying to get Tamara out of the bedroom, but Pacey claims there's more to their relationship than sex. When you've seen it, there's also reading Time magazine. And of course, as soon as they leave, we see that a kid has been sitting on top of a toilet and is now coughing over. I don't know if it's a joint or just a cigarette, but either way, they would smell it.
Yeah. I don't, unless he did that Grease 2 thing. Yeah, this is me outing myself as having watched Grease 2 repeatedly. What can I say? Jason from the 90210 pilot, Maxwell Caulfield, was in it. He was wearing gold leathers, and it told me a lot about myself.
Yeah.
When it was on HBO every day. Anyway, Adrian Smith's character, like, has a cigarette lit in his mouth, waiting for the principal to leave the bathroom. I don't try that or flush it. Like, presumably you stole the whole pack of menthols from your mom. Just flush that one and start over.
So one scene later, a delighted Jen asks Dawson if he has heard this rumor about Pacey that's been going around. And instead of faking shock, Dawson quietly asks who told her. Apparently everyone did, and off of Dawson's obvious distress, Jen has to ask if it is true, and Dawson says he can never lie to her, so she should pretend she didn't ask, like, okay, got it. And inside, Joey is also gagging about this rumor. 2024 me is a little taken aback that Pacey's two best female friends are making such a meal out of this instead of being upset, but then 1998 me remembers this was all being portrayed as naughty and not criminal. Anyway. They all watch Pacey blithely walking the halls, apparently the last one to hear this rumor about himself, until a girl that we don't know stops him and whispers in his ear, and Pacey realizes his life has just changed. And in a dark classroom, Dawson and Pacey let us know Joey has traced the rumor back to the actual source. Dawson tries to say it's not so bad, but Pacey knows it is, and his only hope is it doesn't get back to Tamara, which seems unlikely. Dawson says that since Pacey knows now, he can just act like it isn't true and everyone will move on. And oh, honey, that's not how the news cycle worked back then. There was not another story coming along to knock this off. This was the story for the next 5 months.
Yeah, sure was.
But Pacey does try, except, in my opinion, Pacey acting cheerful and confident doesn't really contradict the rumor, since his role is supposed to be, you know, the triumphant prodigy swordsman or something. And then Tamara is in class trying to teach. Clip three.
Romeo and Juliet offers perhaps the most notable exploration of the forbidden fruit theme that we'll examine this year.
Not anymore.
Mr. Witter, you're late. He's
probably resting up from last night.
Hey, man, settle a bet. Real or silicone?
Keep up the running commentary, Mr. Twitchell, and I'll see you after class.
You promise?
All right, settle down. And where were we?
Forbidden fruit.
Nope.
No.
I mean, there's just, aside from what we've already talked about being wrong with this entire ongoing plot, this would have gotten back to the administration and she would have been hooked out of that class by third period. There's no way. There's no way. The news cycle does travel around. If the kids are practically, like, trying to pap him and interview him about this shit, the vice principal has heard it and has gotten, like, literally a hook and pulled her out of class. I just don't buy it.
After school, Joey finds Pacey moping at the waterfront, calling him jailbait. Pacey says he will not think she's rude if she keeps going, but she sits with him to say she knows what he must be going through. And when he doubts it, she reminds him that as the daughter of an incarcerated person, she has seen people staring at her or avoiding her because of scandal, and also includes sharing a house with your pregnant sister and her black boyfriend as part of her experience in this arena, which, stop putting it that way, yuck, but...
That's really a weird thing that I don't think Grams would continue to put it that way, like that everybody in the town seems to think of it in this very bizarre, like 1930s way.
Yeah.
Just maps way closer onto like coastal North Carolina culture to me. But yeah, I also wish that they would let that go because the Cape also contains Provincetown. Like nobody cares, really. I'm telling you.
Anyway, Joey says Pacey can do what she did, pray for a better story to come along. And when Tamara gets home, Pacey is waiting for her clip four.
Let's not have this conversation, Pacey.
What conversation?
The one where you apologize to me and tend to my wounded heart, all the while explaining why you're not to blame for opening up your big mouth.
No, I'm not. I only told Dawson I didn't know Kenny Lieberman was in that bathroom.
You know, there was one boundary placed on this relationship, Pacey. Not sex. Not true intimacy. Only one. You don't talk about it. You don't tell your friends and you don't brag to your classmates. Although now I wonder if discretion is just too adult a concept for a boy to grasp.
Wait, listen. I want you to hear my side of the story, okay? It's not what you think.
Well, you can't tell me anything I haven't already overheard in the teacher's lounge. Oh, yes. That's right. You see, we're already the talk of the faculty. Which means it's only a matter of time before the administration gets wind of it, and then the school board, and maybe, if we're really lucky, the district attorney.
I'm sorry,
You know, this morning, I think it was, you suggested that we should do more of the things that couples do. Well, I've got one idea that fits the bill. Let's break up.
Bitch, you're a teacher. You're around 15-year-olds all day. How the feathery fuck did you think this was going to turn out?
I don't know. I also want to point out, it's after school. Joey's out. Pacey's out. Miss Jacobs is out. So it's at least, at this point, like 3:30. I just want to note this for when we get to the A plot, because it stays daylight until, like, what would have had to be 11:30 at night. And it's supposed to be, like, October.
Yeah, which it's like one of the easternmost points in the U.S. It gets dark way early, like 3:50 in October. It's not cute.
Anyway, later, Pacey is trudging home when he gets waylaid by Doug, who heard the rumor at the barbershop. Doug thought that if sex was involved, the kid couldn't be Pacey, but the word is the kid made it all up. So Doug changed his mind and he feels so bad for poor Tamara. Pacey thought it was up to him to let the town know at least one widder was having straight sex. Ugh. Also, did it ever occur to Doug to defend Pacey? Pacey wonders. Doug mirthlessly chuckles that the school board will be just as moved by that because, oh yeah, Superintendent Stevens called an emergency board meeting about whether to charge Tamara, and Pacey will probably have to testify. Because some people in Capeside take Pacey seriously, and Pacey mopes that it's too bad Doug is not among them. And then goes straight from this conversation to town hall, finding Tamara sitting with another adult woman and idiotically addressing Tamara as Tammy. But before he can say anything else, Tamara's lawyer that she has on like 23 minutes notice before this hearing introduces herself and states Tamara is not going to be discussing the case with him. And if he wants to talk to her in the future, it can go through Caroline. And Pacey, crestfallen, asks Caroline to tell her client he is sorry. And then we're in this hearing that is happening the same day. Yes. Tamara's...
With her in a different outfit and I think a different like Joan Crawfordian hairstyle.
Yes.
Like, okay.
Yeah. They're just having a hearing. There's been no time for anyone to assemble any evidence, investigate anything. It's just, it's the same day and we're going to meet about it and determine the future of your career and maybe life. Sure.
Yep.
Anyway, yes, Tamara's heard the rumor. Yes, Pacey's one of her students. And then the head of the school board asks straight up, are the allegations true? And Tamara very guiltily glances at her lawyer. But then... Clip five.
Well, you see...
No. No, they're not.
Mr. Witter, you are to wait until you're summoned.
Look, I don't mean any disrespect here, but if you'll just give me a second, I'll have you all home for dinner, okay?
Okay, Mr. Witter, what is it you need to say?
Look, I know the origin of these rumors has been traced to me, and I guess that would make sense, because look at me, here I am, a C-plus student who sits in the back of Miss Jacobs' English class every day, daydreaming about the same thing, about what it'd be like to be a little bit better looking, a little more sophisticated, and about 15 years older. Because then, and only then, could Miss Jacobs possibly look at me as anything other than just another one of her students. And only then could this rumor stand any chance of being true. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm real flattered with the seriousness that you took these allegations, but, you know, personally, I'd always just kind of chalk them up to adolescent fantasy. Kind of expected you guys to do the same.
I mean, it's good acting by Joshua Jackson, but as always, it's in the service of a real skin crawler, and Tamara doesn't deserve it.
And she, as the adult in the situation, should not be letting him take the fall for it.
No.
I mean, he's not going to be charged with anything, but he is going to get in trouble, and this is going to be his reputation for the rest of his time in Capeside.
Yep.
But the superintendent asks for clarification. Is Pacey saying the story isn't true? And as Tamara looks dewy-eyed about her champion behind her doing clone high supplication hands, Pacey states that Tamara is his English teacher, and that's it. So
he totally is.
Yep. Afterward, Doug finds Tamara at town hall to apologize for Pacey on behalf of the family and basically say Pacey has been a fuck up all his life. And Tamara says in that case, it's remarkable that he has grown into a sweet, sensitive, intelligent young man. And also Doug should call her Miss Jacobs. Well, it's not going to be a factor for very much longer. Mm-hmm. And outside the school, Pacey watches Tamara drive away. It again, it's so, so bright out, as you'll see in the visual aids. It's, you know, got to be at least 6 o'clock by now. One presumes, like, and it's still light out when Pacey comes to see Tamara at her place, presumably hours later, because now she's changed and packing. She is grateful for what he did. He was hoping she didn't mean it when she said she wanted to break up, because he will never talk about them again. And she knows he won't, because there won't be anything to talk about. She quit. She'll be at her sister's house in Rochester tomorrow. He had to know this day was coming, and he says he didn't, actually, because he's a kid. Clip six.
You must understand, Pacey, I care for you more deeply than I ever expected or wanted to. But I'm 36 years old, and I want to have children before it's too late.
Well, you had a child. That's the problem, actually. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. I don't care for it.
Sorry. Then she says she wants to be their mother, not their girlfriend. Anyway, clip seven.
You know, just because I'm older and arguably more mature doesn't mean that I know what to say in these situations any more than you do. So please, let's just say goodbye now. Before I get maudlin and embarrassing and entirely too truthful.
Is a farewell kiss permitted?
Oh. I don't know. I seem to remember that's what started this whole mess to begin with.
You know what? I think I could handle it tomorrow.
Well, I'm not sure I can.
Are we actually supposed to find this, like, touching?
Mm. They almost get there, because they're both, they are both really good, even her, being the hateful character.
Yeah.
They hug, and it looks like Joshua Jackson is really good at hugging. I'll just say that. Seeing the visual aids.
I think that's true.
He hopes she enjoys Rochester. She hopes he enjoys high school. Somehow we do see her again, but not for a while. And it is finally fucking dark out when Pacey trudges along the beach and stops outside Tamara's house again, watching her look sadly out the window and then turn off a lamp. And he smiles and says goodbye to her, to himself. And then I guess they were short because we watch him walk for like 30 seconds on the beach before it's the closing credits. And that's a wrap on them, at least. Thank God. Now we're in our A plot. Bessie's baby, Bond's unexpected allies. We open on yet another close-up look at Dawson's room, specifically all the little paper ephemera behind his headboard, which you can see in the visual aids, as a black and white movie that I don't recognize ends, and Joey, next to him on the bed, perfunctorily calls it great and heads for the window because Bessie is due next week and she needs extra help at home. Dawson, an only child in the center of his household, apparently confidently states that Bodhi can take care of Bessie's needs and they never watch just one movie on movie night. Joey says there's a first time for everything, and Jen adds that it's a night of firsts because that's our first indication that she's there sitting on Dawson's desk chair, very much alone next to the bed. And Joey claims not to know what Jen's talking about, and Jen's like, movie night is obviously your all's thing, and since I feel like I'm intruding, I am going to leave. And Dawson whines at her not to go. But Jen says a few hours apart won't kill them. Plus, once Grams sees Joey leave, she will not trust Jen and Dawson alone. And Joey eye rolls that Jen shouldn't leave on her account. And Dawson's like, great, next movie. But as the two girls flank the bed, Jen says they haven't solved anything. Clip 8.
All right, so let me get this straight. Movie night has been reduced to the following. You can't stay if she leaves because your grandmother wouldn't permit it. And you can't stay if she stays because it's awkward.
Yeah.
And you can't stay if she leaves because you feel like you've driven her away. And you can't stay if she's here because it ruins movie night for you.
Well put.
And since this is my house and we assume that I can't go anywhere, according to my calculations, it only leaves one option.
Night, Dawson.
Wait a minute.
I'll see you tomorrow. Don't stay up too late.
Movie night. Way too complicated.
They don't know we know they know. Yeah, that's the state of play. The next morning, Bodhi greets Bessie, asking how we are feeling, which she apparently does not care for. I love that he's pouring cereal, so we know it's the morning while she is eating a popsicle, because when you're pregnant, anything is an anytime food, in my opinion. Go nuts. After they exposit that her due date is a week away, she complains about the unfairness of human biology. Clip 9.
Do you know the average gestation period for the fruit bat is 2 months? 2 months, that's fair. That's reasonable. Why can't I give birth to a fruit bat?
Because we're about 80% sure you're human.
Do you still live here?
That's not bad.
Well played, sisters. Yeah.
I agree. Mm-hmm. More exposition. Bodhi has an interview at a restaurant in Hyannis today. Ooh, I hope nothing happens while he's gone. When the sisters resume sniping at each other, Bessie makes Bodhi tell Joey to leave her alone. And Sarah and I both were struck by Joey starting her day with a Diet Coke. I would love to criticize. I sure drank Coke at breakfast every day when I was in high school, so I can't.
Yeah, my sister-in-law still drinking it at breakfast. She's not a coffee guy, but Diet Coke does a treat, she says.
Yep. It's me with Pepsi Zero Sugar, which has the most caffeine of any commercially available soda, in case anyone was wondering if you're looking for 69 milligrams of caffeine in your can.
Nice.
That's what you get. Over to Jen's room, where Grams is gathering Jen's sexy underwear into the laundry hamper and having a small silent conniption about Jen's wall calendar of artsy male nudes. Clip 10.
I don't care who's hanging them. In my house, we don't ogle naked men.
No, we pray to them, right?
Not bad.
I mean, yeah, not bad.
Although Jen looks like she immediately regrets being glib about this as Grams, scandalized, asks what happened to the little girl who respected the church's teachings. Jen takes too long to say she has considered the possibilities and decided against the existence of God, or more succinctly, she grew up. Grams says maybe she just thinks she did. And walking home after school later, Jen admits that she and Grams are in a destructive cycle where they are constantly needling each other and takes the blame for her part. And as Grams comes out to glare at Jen and Dawson from the doorway, Dawson says Jen has to figure something out if she doesn't want to ignore Grams for the next 3 years. Hey, what was going on with Dawson's parents, by the way? Because their crumbling marriage doesn't come up in this episode at all.
No, it only does because they're out of town for marriage counseling, which I guess has to be undertaken in like Mystic, Connecticut. There's no reason for them to even leave the Cape for that, I wouldn't say, but I have more complaints about that. There is like a throwaway line about how they vacated Dawson Manor.
Oh, I don't know how I missed that. Thank you for the correction. Mm-hmm.
That's how everybody ends up there and why Bessie is, you know, getting amniotic fluid all over Gail's couch.
Yes, we'll get there momentarily. So when Joey gets home, she finds Bessie in the truck stuck in the mud. She was on her way to the clinic because she's pretty sure she's in labor. Their phone is not working right now for reasons we don't hear, I assume monetary, but that means the closest one is at Dawson's and Joey has to get her there to call an ambulance. And with the truck out of commission, there's only one way, which is for Joey to row Bessie across the creek at, I swear to God, late sunset. Like, you're going to see this in the visual. There's no mistaking it. Like, it's golden hour. It's past golden hour.
Yep.
Until Bessie barks at Joey for rowing like a girl and takes over herself. Joey thinks the boat is leaking, but it's not the boat. And then Joey is bursting into Dawson's room to say Bessie's giving birth on his lawn. And then Dawson's on the phone saying the ambulance is coming, but it's stopping in Duxbury first due to a traffic accident. And supposedly that's an hour away, Sarah.
So much of this depends on where on the Cape they're supposed to be. But OK, I will try to be quick and then maybe I don't have to have this fulmination again. The Cape looks like a flexed arm of land that is sticking off of the mainland. Depending on where they are, like there's no interstates on the Cape, and there's for a lot of the Cape above the quote elbow, like the forearm part, is just one quote major highway, which for a lot of the way is one lane in each direction. I mean, not that you can't go 70, and I have, but it's, you know, there's not a lot of ways to get on and off the Cape,
right?
But there's a hospital at the elbow. There's, if you move in from the elbow towards the armpit, which is closer to where Hyannis is, Kennedy Country, there's like a, in the upper arm, there's a lot of stuff. Boston is like up, if you're flexing your arm, it's like up at the corner of your head above your ear. And then Duxbury is below that, like where your neck meets your shoulder. So I don't understand what that would have to fucking do. Like, if they're further up the Cape, the local first aid squad would pick them up and take them to Dennis. There's no reason for them to go to Boston. Like, people go to Boston for medical stuff, but to have a baby, like a woman in her 20s, when the baby's roughly on time and not super early, there's no need. So this makes no sense. And why did they pick a specific town when that was not going to play into what happened? Like, it's possible to make this like a reasonable thing that would happen on the Cape, but it should have happened during the storm episode when like shit was out because of wind.
Not now
when it's like, well, there's, you have, in order to get to the hospital, you have to go through Duxbury, or like all the ambulances have gone to Duxbury. No, they wouldn't.
Yeah.
They'd go to Plymouth. Like, it makes no sense.
Yes. Also, if the idea was, okay, we can't have the baby come and this marriage collapse in the same episode, like, it would have made more sense for the parallel structure for the Learys to have their problem come out in the same episode as Paisley and Tamara.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't, like, they're not going to get certain Cape things right, and that's fine, but the best way not to fuck it up and annoy people is to just be
vague. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very easy to do. And some things they get right. Like, Hyannis is a place. They get some stuff right. I don't know why they bothered putting it there. There's nothing we could do about it. I will try to confine this rant or, like, come up with some hashtag for it so you don't have to hear it again. Thank you for your patience.
Okay, just one more thing and then we can move on. If Dawson and Jen walk to school, they must not be far from town. So call anyone in town that you know who has a vehicle to come and get Bessie, even if, as she later exposits, the nearest doctor is 30 miles away. Like, you know somebody in the town. Call Doug.
Yeah, call the fire department. Walk to the school. They have a phone and a nurse.
Yes.
if you're that close to the school.
Go interrupt the school board hearing and ask someone to drop
Seriously.
Her. Anyway, then Bessie gets on the phone to talk just like everybody else. Clip 11.
Listen, you sorry-ass civil servant, this is the mother-to-be talking. Maybe I'm not in the tax bracket that guarantees a prompt response to medical distress, but I have a shoe full of amniotic fluid, my pelvis is beating like a rumba band, and I'm in real danger of having my first child delivered by two high school students. So why don't you stop making excuses? Get off your oversized backside and get us an ambulance before my fetus enters college!
Oh. Terrific. I'm sure they'll be right on their way.
Hope they bring a thesaurus.
Christ.
They're not on their way because when we come back to the storyline, Bessie's groaning, Joey's hissing at Dawson about what to do, and we all know, cut next door, Jen's doing her homework when she reaches into her desk and finds a Bible, and instead of just getting the pencil or whatever she was looking for and closing the drawer again, she has to go downstairs and pick a fight, even though it's Graham's house. There's nothing saying the Bible hasn't been in the drawer since before Jen lived there, but never mind. Jen rants on about Graham's respecting her beliefs, but then Graham's can't respond because Joey's at the door, glaring at her with the Kubrick look. Kubrick staring at her, totally, when and then babbling a way too wordy request for Grams to come and help deliver Bessie's baby. And the glare that Grams greets this with is gorgeous. And you can see both of these looks in the visual aids. And then we're in the living room. Dawson has his video camera out. He's begging to film the birth for the sake of the absent Bodie. Bessie agrees if she can have Final Cut, she should also order Dawson to stay by her head. But no, he is posted up in the splash zone when Joey comes back.
Shooting right up the junction. That's right. Shit's sake.
Bessie's not happy to see Grams, who ignores Bessie's ranting as she checks Bessie's pulse. Tells the kids how to make themselves useful, finally addresses Bessie. Clip 12.
I'm going to make you a deal. This is going to be a big day for you, and as your attending nurse, you may feel an overwhelming outpouring of gratitude towards me when we are done here today. But I promise I will not take advantage of your postpartum bliss, and I will resist any urge to bond with you over the shared experience of this event if you will do me one small favor in return.
What's that?
Shut up. Now, where are those towels?
Hell yeah!
Why does she also have to talk like that? Like, it's not just that it's overly wordy, and it's not just that a lot of the 50-cent words are actually, you know, 49.9 cents because they're using them wrong. Like, prevalent was used wrong earlier. It's not good. But do they all have to do that?
Yeah.
Like, The Flash does it. I'm talking about Mitch Leary, by the way.
Uh-huh.
I still have not been able to stop calling him The Flash.
Nope.
After over 25 years of thinking about the show.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just exhausting. But what's fascinating, since we can't get out of that and aren't really going to be able to, like, the writer's room never quite learns how to differentiate them with their dialogue.
Yep.
Some of the actors you don't notice, and some of them you do.
Yeah.
And with Mary Beth Pyle, you don't.
Nope. Agree.
I love her.
She's the best. So as Bessie labors, Dawson zooms in on Joey, clutching her elbows on the couch. And when he sits with her and promises everything's going to be all right, she puts her usual armor back on and scoffs that she knows. And later still, Bessie screaming as if Graham's is not there looking. Jen quietly says there's blood, and Bessie panics that something is wrong that Grams isn't telling her. Grams calmly says Jen just doesn't know a bloody show is a natural part of the process and sends Jen out for a cool washcloth. Bessie begs Grams to tell her she's doing okay, and Dawson babbles that it's great. He wouldn't be filming otherwise, and he turns the lens toward Grams, telling her to smile. She bats it away and orders him out. And then follows to bitch out Jen for undermining her authority with her patient. And instead of saying, you're right, I'm sorry, Jen digs in and says she knows what a lot of blood looks like. Grams agrees it's more than she would prefer, but that there's no evidence of an issue. And regardless of their many fights about Jen's principles, if Jen has any faith at all in Grams, now would be the time to believe in her. So they return to the living room, Jen immediately whining that Bessie is in pain, like the conversation we just saw didn't happen. Bessie mumbles that she needs something. When Grams asks what, Jen starts babbling about medicine, which Grams says she doesn't have, but she might have something that works even better and starts reciting the Lord's Prayer. And there's bickering about this, including from Bessie. But she does eventually join in with the recitation. And then Grams tells her to push, and Bessie pushes, and I swear to God, goes cross-eyed. You can see it in the visual aids if you don't believe me, because she really does. It's like full comedy labor going on. Yes. So then Dawson finds Joey outside, and it's like 2 p.m. from the light. Like, there's just absolutely no effort to make any of this day realistic. He jokes that he can't wait to see Gail's face when Dawson tells her what happened in the living room. And then he sees that Joey's crying and tells her Bessie's going to be okay, but that's not it. And Dawson gets Joey to admit Bessie reminds her of her mother. Not always, but definitely right now. And when Mrs. Potter got sick, the pain of chemo would make her cry like Joey had never heard. And Joey prayed never to hear that sound again, and she didn't until now. Dawson gets Joey to realize Bessie needs her as much as her mother did then. And then the baby is beginning to crown. Jen holds Bessie's hand and says she can do this. And Bessie's at the stage where the pop culture pregnant person says they're too tired to push anymore. They can't, and someone else says they can. Grams in this case. Bessie doesn't believe it. Until Joey finally gets her ass back inside and takes Bessie's other hand. And then Jen says, he's out and he's healthy and beautiful and gigantic.
Yes. Covered with smuckers. Aw.
Again, just like you love to see. It's all very typical.
Someone get a couple of slices of toast and some peanut butter. It's a party.
Grams puts the baby in Bessie's arms and everyone is happy and the baby makes baby noises. And at Grams's later, Jen comes down after a shower and smiles that it was a long day. A good day, Grams says. Jen is going back up when Grams stops her and says, just because they don't say certain things to each other doesn't mean they don't feel them. And Jen smiles and turns around again, but Grams isn't done. Clip 13.
After what you experienced today, can you honestly tell me you still hold no belief in God?
Well, I don't know about God, but I think I may have come around a little on man.
All right, sure. And then we're at the Potter house. Bodie is back. Bessie hands Joey her enormous newborn without asking Joey to take her coat off first, even though anything could be on it. Joey agrees. He has their late mother's eyes. And the baby continues to be cute and gigantic. And that's the end. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Duh, Grams.
Yeah, Grams.
Save the day. Least valuable player. Whoever was in charge of continuity, because I swear to God, the light in every scene was making me insane.
Yeah, daylight saving time. I don't, I mean, tomorrow, obviously, but I will do a dishonorable mention for Doug. Fuck off, dude. That's your brother.
Yep.
Speaking of fucking off, hello. Next time on Again With This Melrose Edition, the least interesting love quadrangle in TV history points on Amanda's new sketchy Richie client does sketchy Richie business. Kyle and Jane get closer and Sarah runs away. Relatable. Speaking of relatable, you may not find anything that is relatable in some of the late 90s fashion don'ts in our visual aids, but you can find them either way at againwiththispodcast.com. And don't forget to check our club page. There is a literal metric ton of extra 90210, Melrose, and Dawson's content for Patreon supporters, and you can hang out with us / your fellow listeners on our dedicated Discord. Go to againwiththispodcast.com/club for more information. I'm Cape Geography Reply Guy, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Refreshing Breakfast Popsicle, Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is right on his way. Talk to you next time.
Dawson's Creek is canceled. Bye-bye.